Welcome to another edition of the Volunteer State. I'm Blake Topmeyer with John Adams of the Knoxville News Sentinel. John, Tennessee has been in limbo for weeks now, and on Monday, everything came to a culmination. Tennessee announcing the for-cause firings of 10 individuals within the football program, including Coach Jeremy Pruitt and assistant coaches Brian Niedermeyer and Shelton Felton. In connection with an ongoing investigation into recruiting malfeasance within the football program that the university expects will result in multiple major NCAA infractions. Additionally, Philip Fulmer is on his way out as athletic director. He will step down after a new athletic director is hired. That search is ongoing. The university says Fulmer is not tied to the investigation, but is going to move aside to allow his successor to hire the next coach. So, several major stories to unpack, John. First off, your reaction to the news of the week.
The Monday Massacre, I think it will be known as forevermore. Yeah, we just went from, as you said, from limbo, from murkiness, uncertainty, to wham. I mean, it was pretty sudden. But we've been talking about this for weeks. I don't think either one of us was surprised at what happened. I was impressed with actually what Donde Plowman did as chancellor. I think it was necessary what she did. It was severe. She didn't pull any punches. Will that hurt Tennessee with the NCAA later on? I think it would hurt it a lot more if she hadn't been forthcoming. This was going to come out. So I think Tennessee did what it needed to do. And in a way now, we've had this defining moment, yet we go from that to more murkiness as to what's going to happen with a new AD. You have to hire a new AD. Then he will be involved in the hiring of a new football coach. I know this is prolonged, but I still think that's the right thing to do. I like what she and Randy Boyd, the president of the UT system, I like what they've done here. I mean, we're almost going back to ground zero, but I think it was required. I just don't think there was no way to wiggle out of any of this. People are saying, well, they should have just paid Pruitt his buyout. Well, I still think this was coming out. They would have been really foolish to try and cover up this.
John, you know, you mentioned even though we've been in limbo, some of this we felt was inevitable for weeks. I mean, we've been discussing next Tennessee football coaches. I think that was 2 weeks ago we discussed that. And part of the reasoning there was I think we both felt that this was going to be the conclusion, that Jeremy Pruitt was going to be fired. And to me, the only question for the last 2 weeks was, or the main question for the last 2 weeks was, is Tennessee going to fire Pruitt for cause and tell him, go away, you get nothing? Or is Tennessee going to try to reach a front-end settlement with Pruitt on a certain figure between $0 and $12.6 million to avoid the potential breach of contract lawsuit that could follow? I'm a little surprised. I'm on record saying in this podcast, I figured that a settlement would probably be more likely, but Tennessee has chosen the you get $0, go away, and if you want to sue us, we'll see you in court option, it seems. Are you surprised that Tennessee went with that option or no?
Maybe a little bit, but I've been hearing things both ways. And I wonder if there was an anger component, almost an anger component to this. The chancellor and the president were so appalled at what had happened and the severity of this, the breadth of this, to just read all of the results from their internal investigation. They were just angry at the guy, not just for cheating, but for being so sloppy at it. I'm guessing here. That's obviously not a fact, but I do wonder about that. That we don't want to give this guy a penny. He did this to us, and we don't want to give him 1 cent.
What's going to be interesting is if that holds up, Pruitt's lawyer is the lawyer that represented David Beatty at Kansas, who wound up getting some money after Kansas tried to fire him for cause. But you know, no two situations are the same. And you know, drawing a direct line other than the connection of the same lawyer between the Kansas situation and the Tennessee situation, I mean, it doesn't work. They're different circumstances. But we have not to this point, you know, been told the number of violations other than that the chancellor says that they're serious in number and in nature, involve a lot of people, she says, involve a matter of concealment and an effort to conceal what was going on. But we haven't, you know, had a full telling of the violations. That probably won't come for some time until the NCAA makes a ruling on this. But, you know, one thing that's interesting, John, that I don't know that I was necessarily expecting was that Philip Fulmer would be on his way out so quickly. I'm not surprised that Philip Fulmer is ending his tenure as athletic director during the 2021 calendar year. But I will say that I did not necessarily expect this to be a 1-2 punch here. And I thought maybe that they would try to fill the football coach first, and then replace Fulmer as athletic director maybe in the summer heading into the next school year. What did you think about, you know, the fact that this is not just going to be a coaching change, that Fulmer, while not being fired, is stepping aside and will retire and be replaced as athletic director?
That's kind of my line of thinking, too, on the way it would be handled. But I don't think the university leaders wanted Fulmer to have any part of the next coaching hire.
Well, John, no, they said this was Fulmer's decision to step aside.
I asked Chancellor Plowman if we could revisit my position, and she agreed. My thoughts are, I'm 70 years old. I am not going to be the athletic director at age 80. It was always my expectation I would move on from athletics sooner rather than later.
That he stood up and said, "Hey, I'm going to make a decision. I'm not going to be I'm not going to be the athletic director at Tennessee in 10 years, and I want that next athletic director and next coach to know that they can be here for 10 years and have the same athletic director leadership throughout. So I'm going to volunteer to step." You don't believe that?
I think they gave him an ultimatum. We can do this one way or we can do it another way. Philip Fulmer was fired in my mind. I don't see how there's any other way you'd look at it. He likes cashing that check on a regular basis. He wouldn't have given that up out of his own sense of caring for the university or the athletic department or the football program. No, he was fired, but they put a beautiful face on it.
And he suggested that I hire a new athletics director to select the new head football coach.
Really, it was a great example of overacting.
Philip came out of retirement to take his current position and never intended for it to be long-term.
I mean, they practically deified the guy.
Philip Fulmer is demonstrating why he's a legend at UT. Once again, agreeing to serve the university he loves, and I want to thank him.
After he had just let this football program totally run amok.
I have relied on Philip's counsel since the day I arrived. And I will continue to rely on his assistance and advice even after he retires as athletic director. His sterling reputation in college athletics and his knowledge.
You know, he's out there checking out those old linemen in practice. Meanwhile, the football complex is on fire. Flames are leaping from it. And he's looking at that. He's telling that offensive tackle about his first step and on a scrimmage play. Yeah, and the building's going up in flames. He was totally oblivious to this.
You know, it's interesting, John, was 20-plus years ago, Philip Fulmer had a keen eye for spotting impropriety that he thought was occurring in another program at the University of Alabama. Had a pretty keen eye in pointing that out, but didn't seem to have any clue of what was happening under his own watch, at least according to the university brass.
And I also want to underscore, there is no allegation, nor has anything been said that suggested that Philip was in any way involved or knew anything about any of this.
No, he was blinded by that O-line video he kept studying. And what's interesting to me is that although he was helping with the offensive line never played up to expectation. So, you know, don't just blame Will Friend for that. Blame the auxiliary offensive line coach masquerading as an AD. Yeah, they gave him a wonderful send-off, and I just thought they went overboard with that. I just think they would say something like, well, thanks for your service.
Fulmer couldn't get out the door without one more cringeworthy moment as an athletic director. When asked to provide an assessment of how the football program evolved during Jeremy Pruitt's tenure, Philip Fulmer said that recruiting was good.
Certainly the recruiting has been good.
And it just really it kind of brought things almost to a halt. Like, wait a second, did Fulmer not get the memo of why we're all here today? 10 individuals are being fired for cause for recruiting malfeasance within the football program. And Philip Fulmer's quote is, recruiting was good under Jeremy Pruitt. And that was...
Yes,
a fitting end to an athletic director tenure.
Yeah, that's a great closing line, isn't it? That's the goodbye. Yeah, recruiting's going great. Cash flow is fine. We're all prospering here. So the record doesn't really reflect how well many of our recruits have done here while with the program since they were recruited. And things are just going to be fine. Sorry I won't be a part of it, but I feel it's time to move on. Yeah, that was just awesome. And it just shows such a lack of perspective, such a lack of awareness. As you said, here's why we're here, recruiting violations. And Philip Fulmer actually says, well, recruiting's going pretty good.
It was almost something like out of a Saturday Night Live skit, a parody of what an athletic director should say at a press conference when you're announcing the firings of 10 individuals for alleged malfeasance and recruiting violations within the football program. You would think that line one of the memo would be, don't say recruiting was good. But anyway, that comes to a close. John, do you think university brass say that Philip Fulmer is not involved in the violations, but he has several fire for cause provisions in his contract. And he could be, according to the terms of his contract, he could be fired for cause without ever committing a violation himself. Fulmer could be fired for cause, according to the terms of his contract, if someone he supervises engages in conduct likely to result in an NCAA Level 1 or Level 2 violation, and the university deems that Fulmer should have known about the violation, but did not exercise due diligence and failed to respond appropriately. And so... You know, I asked on Tuesday of this week, I asked Chancellor Plowman and Assistant President Randy Boyd, why wasn't Philip Fulmer fired for cause under that provision in his contract? And they both said, the Chancellor in particular, that there was a considerable effort in concealing what was occurring in the football program from anyone outside that operation, and so that it wasn't reasonable for Philip to know about these violations, and that as soon as the Chancellor's office found out that something was going on, that Philip did his job, and Randy Boyd backed that up, saying that Philip was removed from these infractions, and it wouldn't have been reasonable to expect him to know about these infractions. What do you make of that, and what's your thought? I mean, should Philip Fulmer have been not sitting at the table on Monday at the press conference, but holding a termination letter in his own hand?
Of course he should have been. You go back to the firing of Jimmy Brumbaugh, the defensive line coach by Jeremy Pruitt. With what was a buyout, they have to pay him $800,000 or so dollars for, according to his contract, he gets that severance package. That was after 4 weeks. They're in the middle of a financial crisis during this COVID pandemic. Yet Jeremy Pruitt gets upset with how the D-line is performing, and he fires a D-line coach, and now Tennessee's out that money. You shouldn't be able to just do that on the spur of the moment. He should have to at least let his supervisor know, Philip, I'm getting ready to fire my D-line coach. Who could have approved that in the middle of a financial crisis? You want to talk about firing him for cause? Go back to September when he gave Jeremy Pruitt a contract extension and a raise. For what? What did he think? Jeremy Pruitt was just going to walk away because he didn't think he was getting paid enough money. He already was overpaid, and Philip Fulmer paid him even more. That was cause enough right there for firing him.
Let me rephrase, John, and see if your answer is still the same. Not so much could have Fulmer have been fired for cause, or should he have? Was this the right move to play the PR game here and allow Fulmer to retire, to stand aside with some dignity, rather than being fired? And you know, I mean, Philip Fulmer, his support maybe was eroding at large in the fan base, but I think it's fair to say he still enjoys some support from football alumni from years gone by, maybe players that he had coached, you know, when he was part of Tennessee's successful era of football. Do you think this was the right move, regardless of whether he could have been fired or should have been fired? Do you think this was the right move to handle it this way, to allow him to retire rather than fire him? Or should Tennessee have said, you know, the heck with the public relations of firing Philip Fulmer a second time and rocking that boat of support that he might have and taking that avenue?
I think they needed to take an assessment of just how damaging Philip Fulmer has been to this university for a long time. He never should have been hired as athletic director to begin with. He wasn't doing his job. I mean, he had a second job helping with the offensive line. And you get back to quoting the chancellor and the president. Philip Fulmer wasn't involved in any violations that were uncovered in the investigation. You didn't have to complete that sentence. All you had to say was Philip Fulmer wasn't involved. He wasn't involved. He was an AD in name only. And the football program has crashed, and he's just cashing his check and studying video of that old line that kept getting worse.
Yeah, whether he could or should have been fired, you know, I mean, I think moving past that, Philip Fulmer came in on day one and said his top priority was revitalizing Tennessee's football program. There's no doubt this was a failed athletic director reign, and now Tennessee's looking to close the book on the whole era and move forward here with a new AD football coach combo. So let's take the direction there for a little bit, John, because I think that's the next thing on a lot of fans' minds is who will be the next AD, who will be the next football coach. And Tennessee is going to handle this AD first, and then the next AD will hire the coach. You know, in talking to the chancellor about that, she said she knows some people will disagree with that decision, that the football coach needs to happen quickly, needs to happen first.
Now, I realize many people would prefer we make those hires in the opposite order. But I hope everyone will accept the judgment that this is the way for us to have the long-term success we all want.
But she doesn't think that's a smart way to build an athletic department.
I feel a profound sense of responsibility to get this right.
She thinks the athletic director needs to pick the next football coach, to hire the next football coach. I think there's a lot to be said with that. The timeline, though, is challenging. You got to move pretty quickly, I think, on an AD to have a chance to run a football search in time to have someone in place for the 2021 season, because you know it's clear the chancellor would like a football search to happen. This is not, you know, Kevin Steele's been appointed to acting head coach, and surely he can throw his hat in the ring to become a candidate for the job. But it's clear Tennessee does not want to issue an interim coach label for the 2021 season. They want to have a head coach hired by the new AD for this season. How feasible do you think that is?
I think it will be challenging, and I think it will limit your options. Two names that have come up ever since Jeremy Pruitt has been on the hot seat are Billy Napier, coach at Louisiana, and Jamie Chadwell, the Tennessee native, who was National Coach of the Year, according to the Associated Press, based on what he did at Coastal Carolina. Those are guys that you would think in a normal world would certainly take the UT job if given the opportunity. This isn't a normal world. Jamie Chadwell has a good team coming back. So does Billy Napier. So I can't see an up-and-coming coach with their resume taking a chance on Tennessee. It's a big risk because you just don't know how bad this can be. You don't know what the NCAA might do. You don't know what else might be uncovered. And another thing that's significant is you won't be able to risk cheating. Cheating goes on at a certain level at all these SEC schools. So you've got some strong limitations. Your career's going fine. Billy Napier's had opportunities before. I don't know that Jamie Chadwell has had the same kind of opportunities, but he's right up there now. And as I said, there's no rush. You're going to have a next season because your team's going to be good. So what if you don't win all your games? You'll have a winning record and you'll be fine. You'll have other opportunities. I think they would be really reluctant to take this job.
What about this, John? What about thinking the other way and hiring the AD based in part, not entirely, I don't know that you want to hire an AD just based on who they could bring in as a football coach, but what about factoring that into the equation? You know, when you talk about Billy Napier, I look at the athletic director down there at Louisiana and Brian Maggard. This is, you know, an athletic director that's been on the job for 4 years at Louisiana. He was a long-term member of the Missouri Athletic Department, someone I know from covering Missouri for several years. What about taking that, and I'm not saying, you know, that combination specifically, but, you know, what about that? Hiring an AD in part based on could they bring along a head coach that you want, or are they well-placed to bring a different head coach that you would want along with them?
Better yet, if they could bring a quarterback. Also, I would be on board with that. I don't think that should be the main factor, but I do think it's something to consider. I think it would, particularly in this situation, because it might minimize the risk. If you're hiring an AD who's tight with the football coach and he's going to bring him along, that football coach is going to think he's got my back. And when I'm having trouble getting this program out of the ditch, and if I go 3-9 or something disastrous as that, I know this guy's on my side and he will be an advocate for me. And I think so that would add to his comfort. I also think the fact that the chancellor's hiring this person, ultimately it would be her decision with input from many others, but she would want it all to work out. So I would feel like this coach would be coming into a situation, as askew as it might be, you feel like the support would be there. So maybe you're changing my mind a little bit. You also have to look at the fact that the expectations are high here. They're very high considering what the program has been doing for the last 12, 13 years. They're very high, but those expectations have been lowered now. The program is at a very low level. And I don't see how anybody in their right mind is thinking, well, Tennessee should contend for the SEC title next year or the year after that. There are probably penalties coming and scholarship reductions. All of that will factor into it. So maybe it'd make those coaches think about it a little harder. But I still think, I look at Jamie Chadwell, young guy, a great season, a career season, and he's got a good team coming back. I don't know where he wants to go, if he has any, quote, dream job out there.
Or about 7 of them, as most coaches do, right?
Yeah, most of them. They can pull. They probably keep a little piece of notepaper in their wallet that said, my dream job, and they've got like 35 schools listed, but they want to make sure they remember to say, my dream job was, right, blah, blah. So, yeah, see, what I think, to me, it just NFL guy. That's kind of what I think now.
You think they're going to wind up with a former NFL guy? Well, they better get a move on because Alabama's snapping all those guys up as we speak. I mean, Bill O'Brien and Doug Marrone reportedly are both bound for Nick Saban's staff. Now, I guess if you were to offer a head coaching opportunity, maybe you could pry them away. But I don't know, if I'm Bill O'Brien and my opportunity is to be an offensive coordinator under Nick Saban for 1 or 2 years and to bounce back to the NFL or to become a head coach here, I think the better gig might be, the better long-term play might be to be Nick Saban's offensive coordinator for a couple years.
Yeah, I just think about Bill O'Brien. He went into a scandalous situation at Penn State in the aftermath of the Sandusky improprieties, I'm putting it mildly. So he went there and he was there for 2 years and he off to the NFL. He might come to Tennessee and then in 2 years have an NFL job. I don't know. Doug Marrone, I don't think he has the cachet that Bill O'Brien does. I mean, would these guys sign on with the Nick Saban program and then, you know, weeks later take a head coaching job at Tennessee? Man,
Will Friend lasted like 10 days at South Carolina, so let's not give coaches too much credit for the loyalty to their employer.
It's one thing to leave a first year coach. It's quite another to leave Nick Saban. I just think, and also looking at it, and you brought this up, but from a career standpoint, coaches don't just go to Nick Saban to improve their resume. They don't just go there to get well after they've been fired somewhere else or something's happened in their personal life, whatever. They go there because they believe they'll be a better coach from working under Nick Saban. They really do. And I think they do become a better coach. I think Lane Kiffin became a better coach from his time with Nick Saban. So, yeah, that would make more sense because they'd be taking a chance too. I guess what I'm saying, I'm not sure whom Tennessee can hire. I don't know how, you know. What?
Yeah, I mean, well, one person it seems like they won't hire is Hugh Freeze.
And he will take the job. But
and that comes as a real blow to you, John. I know Hugh was your candidate from day one. But, you know, in talking with Randy Boyd on Tuesday, he never mentioned Hugh Freeze by name, but he said, you don't clean house of a bunch of people who aren't following compliance and go out and hire other people who don't seem to have a track record of following compliance. And so I followed up and asked him, are you specifically talking about Hugh Freeze? And Boyd reiterated his stance without addressing Hugh Freeze by name. He never mentioned the word Hugh or Freeze, but he just answered my question and say, I would just say that someone's integrity and their history of integrity will be a key criteria. And reiterated that their history of compliance, you know, would be a factor here. And so to me, you know, he said it would be hypocritical for Tennessee to go out and do what they did Monday and then hire someone that has compliance issues themselves. And so to me, that is Tennessee about as clearly as they're going to do telling people they're not hiring Hugh Freeze. And regardless of what people think of that, I do think, you know, one of John Curry's missteps in 2017 was allowing Vols fans to think that they had a shot at John Gruden. That was never nipped in the bud. It gained steam as that coaching search went along, and Curry did nothing to stop that. And I think this is, you know, quite clearly Tennessee doesn't want to go down that path again of the white whale. At this time, they could land Hugh Freeze if they wanted to, and that would be the fan choice. But it seems like they're pretty clearly, I think, maybe not. I mean, Randy Boyd never mentioned him by name, but John, I think there's no way you can hear those quotes and think that they're not saying we're not hiring Hugh Freeze.
No, I agree. And why I think he's far and away the best candidate they could hire, I would say. The extent of this of these violations, from everything I've learned, the extent of them would pretty much, as Randy Boyd told you, that the hypocrisy would be enormous. And if they go into court with Jeremy Pruitt, I don't think that will happen. There would be a settlement. But if they did, I mean, it would look extremely hypocritical. And it would might look that way by the NCAA. Yeah, the NCAA said, yeah, well, they say they're cleaning up the program, but then they're hiring a guy who left another program in dire straits. Now, so I just, it's unfortunate because I really believed he was one guy that could turn this thing around. I really do believe that. So now he's off the table. But I would venture to say that in the next 5 years, he'll win more games than Tennessee coach does.
Especially if he's at Liberty.
Yeah, wherever he is. You look at other candidates, You know, we still get back to these guys that just got fired. Tom Herman at Texas. Do you think he's a possibility now?
No. I mean, he's enjoying a $15 million buyout. The next move he makes in his career needs to be a smart one, because his career could jump back up from here. I think this is a guy that could still have a nice career. But, you know, the list of guys that are fired from two jobs and then go on to have nice careers is a lot shorter than the list of guys who get fired from the first time. And so his next move needs to really be a smart one, I think. You know, if Tennessee didn't have these recruiting violations and the likelihood of sanctions coming around the corner, then maybe. But, you know, guys like Tom Herman, Gus Malzahn, I just don't know how willing they're going to be to jump into something like this with the reality that penalties are likely coming, both of the self-imposed and possible NCAA variety. One name we haven't talked about, John, but the more this goes, I keep thinking about this name, is Neil Brown at West Virginia. I don't get the sense that Neil Brown is entrenched at West Virginia and wouldn't consider other opportunities. He's a Louisville native who coached at Troy. So he has pretty good ties to the region. He was an assistant at Kentucky, and he's been, you know, he had success at Troy. He's been at West Virginia for a couple years. Hasn't had great success at West Virginia. He's got a 500 record through two seasons at West Virginia. And so I think initially I might have thought, well, the Vols are going to swing bigger than Neil Brown, a guy who's gone 500 in two seasons at West Virginia. But he had a really good record at Troy. You know, he's someone that could be motivated to take this job, I think, because it would be a pay bump, most certainly, and, you know, be a bigger platform in becoming a head coach in the SEC. And so I wonder if someone like that, you know, could find the sweet spot of having enough experience, but also would be willing to take the job. What do you think about him?
I think if he's a smart guy, he would be leery of this situation. To me, he's got to ask himself, how better off would I be in 2 years if I were in West Virginia or if I were at Tennessee? I'll take my chances at West Virginia in the Big 12 than I would Tennessee in the SEC. Forget the money. I mean, he's not gonna starve. The West Virginia's cost of living, I don't think, is quite as high as, say, Washington, D.C. or New York. So he'll be okay money-wise. And I just think he could win more games at West Virginia in the next 2 years than he could at Tennessee.
That's probably true in the next 2 years. And I think that's going to be key for any coach that comes in here. And I think in that way, it's good that the new athletic director will hire the coach, because that AD is going to have to convince the next head coach that you're going to get a long leash here as much as possible at Tennessee. And I know that's almost impossible to get people to believe, because Tennessee coaches don't get a long leash here historically. But, you know, with the likelihood of the penalties that could either be self-imposed or come down from the NCAA, I think you have to convince the coach that we're not going to expect you to, in year one, even year two, you know, to be going out and winning the SEC. Because if you're facing penalties, if you're facing fallout, I mean, what kind of roster are they going to inherit in 2021 after a coaching change this late in the calendar? So I think you would have to get anyone, you know, qualified to consider this job, I think you have to make them feel comfortable that they're going to enjoy a couple years here before the pressure ramps up. I don't know if you can do that. I don't know if that's realistic. I know Vols fans are an impatient bunch usually, but I think that's sort of the task for the next athletic director in getting a qualified coach is convincing someone that the heat's not going to be turned up until you've kind of settled in, had a few years on the job.
Yeah, those are good points. And, you know, you bring up the roster. What do you think Tennessee should do about the players that signed with them in December, the 2021 signing class? First signing date was in December, another one coming up in February. But you go back to that, the investigation began in November. So Tennessee knew something was awry then with the football program. It wasn't public knowledge. There was speculation. So they have their signing class. They had a number of players sign with them. Should they release those players from their letter of intent and allow them to go sign with somebody else?
I think you almost have to. You know, yeah, I think it would be a really bad look at this point, making a change this late in the calendar, I think it would be a pretty bad look for Tennessee. And they're, you know, they're trying to take the moral high ground here. Both the chancellor and the system president have said that integrity matters at Tennessee.
Yes.
You got to do things the right way. And so I think you try to have Kevin Steele do whatever he can to convince those players that everything's going to just take a minute, relax. Let's see who, you know, let's see who Tennessee, who they hire as the next head coach. Give it time. Don't throw yourself back into the recruiting world. And so you lean on him to do as much as he can to keep this roster intact. But yes, I think it would be a really bad look for Tennessee to stand in the way of athletes who are asking out of their letter of intent. We've already seen reports that the signing class's top signee, defensive lineman Dylan Brooks, is going to ask out of his letter of intent. And so that's damaging, but I think the administration had to know that that was a possibility. They had to know that a move at this point in the calendar was going to damage the roster. And I think it was, you know, kind of an eye toward the long term of the program and how to best move past this rather than to do just what was best in the short term in terms of keeping the roster intact.
I think what I would do in that situation is I would talk to not just the recruits, but to the recruits' parents or guardians, and I would be very forthcoming. And you say, we didn't know this was coming when we were recruiting you. And we know you chose Tennessee, but you did so when there were a different coach was here, when we weren't potentially headed for NCAA trouble. You know, but we're intent on building a great program here. And we're kind of starting at the bottom right now. But you can trust us to look after your son. Integrity matters here now. It was lacking in the past. And so you're very forthcoming. And a lot of times people respond to honesty because it's so rare to give total disclosure or seemingly give total disclosure. Look, we've done some awful things here, not the administrators, but the football program. That's not what we want at Tennessee. We want to have an environment where players can prosper as students and athletes, and we'll do everything we can to support that. And we value your son, and we value your son so much. We care about him so much because he believed in us, and that he was willing to sign with us and put his future in our hands. And so now, because he did that, now we would honor his request to leave, and we would wish him the best wherever he goes.
All right, John, we've covered a lot of ground. There's still plenty to go, and we'll unpack more in the next installment, but we'll leave it there for now. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Volunteer State.